Welcome to Digging In, Unearthing Stories of Climate Adaptation, a Lynx podcast series. I'm Cara LeBlanc. As a scientist researching climate change, where do you even start? My head was spinning as I sat down in a quiet corner of the Canadian Mennonite University Library with Rachel Kraus. Rachel is an associate professor of biology here at CMU. Her research focuses on global health and biodiversity and looks particularly at wetlands and river systems. In other words, she has spent a lot of time literally standing in rivers. During her visits to Zimbabwe, Rachel worked alongside a team of other researchers from the Global Biodiversity Information Facility. GBIF is an international network that hosts data about all forms of life on Earth.
In the last few years, there's been a big push to look at not only climate change, but biodiversity, and understanding that these things work together. The funding call for Lynx came out around the same time that Canada hosted a big international biodiversity meeting in Montreal. And so that got included in the Lynx project, which I am delighted about because we can't think about climate change and humans adapting outside of what's happening in ecosystems. Because that's such a big part of the Lynx project, MCC asked GBIF and other researchers like me to focus on biodiversity metrics.
I had heard the term biodiversity before, but I needed a refresher. The World Health Organization describes biodiversity as the variability among living organisms from all sources. Well-functioning ecosystems give us clean air, fresh water, natural medicines, and food security. Losing this variability is a problem. Promoting biodiversity can make an ecosystem more stable, which is very important when the climate is harsh.
The Lynx project, this nature-based solutions that they're introducing, should not only help people adapt to climate change using traditional knowledge, indigenous knowledge, but should also be protecting biodiversity at the same time, because those really go hand in hand. So with the biodiversity research team, we did a baseline survey just as the project was starting, and we're monitoring biodiversity in different ways. Aquatic biodiversity, forests, croplands, and all the margins of croplands, which often get forgotten. Insects and other arthropods, which are super important for ecosystem function, and even microbial diversity. So we've got a big basket of things that we're measuring to see how the nature-based solutions that are being implemented through Lynx are hopefully positively impacting biodiversity in all these different ways.
I was curious what had caught Rachel's eye so far.
Part of what the biodiversity team has been doing is to measure biodiversity on people's farms. So what they're planting and also what else they're using that is naturally occurring. It's very common in the margins around farmlands to have all sorts of wild plants that people do in fact use for food and medicines and other things. And, you know, we're there to collect soil samples and to do very specific things. But also to learn from people about the very special localized products that they're producing or ways that they're producing things. I learned about all sorts of tree fruits that I never heard of before and probably will never see again. And it just reminded me that here in North America, we feel like we have such a diversity of foods available to us in the supermarket. And yet, when you look at the number of actual food plants around the world, it's massively larger than even what seems like great riches to us in our supermarket. And they have all sorts of nutritional benefits and important cultural benefits and medicinal uses as well. And so there's just, you don't need to go out into a jungle or a natural and untouched ecosystem to find really unique wild plants as well.
So what can community members take away from the work Rachel is doing?
People are excited to have it recognized by others that they have important knowledge. And I think that kind of empowerment over our understanding of our natural place is really important for maintaining the kinds of changes that we're hoping to bring about in terms of climate adaptation and living and working in a more harmonious way with how nature actually functions.
Sitting across from Rachel took me back to one of the days I spent in the Gwanda district in southwestern Zimbabwe when I met lead farmers Gladys Dube and Christopher Magwala. The day I arrived in Zimbabwe was very hot, especially coming from a frosty Winnipeg December. As I attempted to adjust to such a flip in climates, I was happily surprised when I woke up the next morning to a much more comfortable weather, not nearly so hot. I felt right at home in my t-shirt. The sun, hiding behind a thick wall of clouds, told me I could leave my hat packed away. On our way to our first stop of the day, I noticed that nobody else seemed to be enjoying the weather as much as I was. Most people were bundled up, even wearing thick jackets on what I would have called the perfect summer day. Remarking on this difference to our Zimbabwean friends, they explained that this was not a normal temperature for the current typically hot season. They were frustrated that the seasons were becoming increasingly more unpredictable, especially when it came to rains. Many regions in Zimbabwe have been experiencing an intense drought over the last decade. Often they cannot predict the next time it will rain, with weeks and sometimes months between rainfalls. When it does rain, it isn't always a sufficient amount. Farming is a source of income and nutrition for the majority of Zimbabwean families, and less rain makes it a lot harder to grow anything. Gladys and Christopher welcomed us into their property where we settled under a tree, providing the perfect amount of shade as the sun began to peek out for the first time on that unusually mild day. We sat in front of the field they farmed together, a well-kept plot surrounded by a sturdy fence to keep animals away from the sprouts that were beginning to emerge from the soil. They told us about new farming methods called conservation agriculture, or CA. CA has three main principles: minimal soil disturbance, permanent soil cover, and crop diversification. Farmers are also measuring the spaces between the seeds they plant and digging basins beside their crops to catch more rainwater. Link's partner organizations are helping to share these methods in all three project districts. In the Gwanda district, BICCDS, the Brethren in Christ Compassionate and Development Services, are training lead farmers like Gladys and Christopher, who then share what they're learning with other farmers. Mkokele Nguni, the Agricultural Extension Officer at BICCDS, hosted our conversation and translated for us. Gladys and Christopher speak Ndebele.
It was a challenge at first. However, due to climate change, drought, shortage of draft power, people are now beginning to appreciate CA. Why they're appreciating CA? Because CA, you don't necessarily have to wait for someone. You can go to the, like what I've said, you can go anytime to the field, and within a small area, you can get higher yield. Yes.
Yeah, mainly one
of the reasons for practicing conversation, especially with the climate change where there's drought, our oxygen power is no longer there, it's minimum. So with conservation agriculture, you can plant anytime, you can plow anytime, you can dig your basins anytime.
Farmers appreciate the flexibility that conservation agriculture gives them.
If there is rain, no matter how little, with CA, you do get results. But if there's no, rain, total no rain, it's difficult to convince people. There was a time where it only rained thrice. Those with CA, they got something. Those without CA, they never got something.
When
you compare, and if you are practicing the real CA, where you are following all the principles of conservation agriculture, CA has got higher yields as compared to what to conventional way. She also gave an example of the crop size. If you compare the crop size for CA, there's a difference.
Meeting Gladys and Christopher shows me what resilience looks like. Farmers are taking a huge leap of faith by leaving their old farming ways behind to experiment with new techniques. It can be a huge risk to go against the methods you have used for so long, to try something uncertain, but many farmers have felt the frustration of low yield seasons for a while and are desperate to find something that works. So when it comes to climate change, where do you start? From Rachel, I learned that biodiversity is incredibly important. Her research will help communities understand their ecosystems and how their farming strategies, both traditional and new, matter. From local farmers, I learned about resilience and the harsh reality of farming in a drought. By adopting conservation agriculture methods, farmers are noticing that their crops have a better chance of growing. Switching from conventional techniques can be hard at first, but seeing positive results is a huge relief. Thank you to my guests, Rachel Krause, Associate Professor of Biology at Canadian Mennonite University, Gladys Dubé and Christopher Magwala, lead farmers in the Gwanda District, and Nkokele Mguni, the Agricultural Extension Officer at Brethren in Christ Compassionate and Development Services. Digging In, Unearthing Stories of Climate Adaptation was written and produced by Kara LeBlanc, with story editing by David Balser and mixing assistance by Daryl Neustetter-Barg. Thanks for listening. I'm Kara LeBlanc. Lynx is a multi-year Mennonite Central Committee project helping climate-affected populations in Zimbabwe adapt to the changing environment. CMU is one of three research partnerships working alongside two Zimbabwe-based research partners and three local development organizations working across three districts. Lynx is administered in partnership with the Government of Canada and with funding from other generous donors.
Lynx is locally led, indigenous, nature-based solutions for climate change adaptation in Zimbabwe. Lynx is locally led.